I'm John.
And I'm Ron.
And I'm Jason. And this is Digital Divination on the No Direction Network.
We are back for episode 117 of Digital Divination, and we are also back to the traditional disclaimer.
Ah, I, Ron Lundeen, am an employee of Wizards of the Coast, but the opinions I express here are mine and not theirs.
Man, we've missed that for about a month.
Well, yeah. I mean, you guys have been doing great stuff, even without me.
Well,
I haven't disclaimed anything.
Well, I mean, that's true.
I was getting
sweats. You guys kind of just get right into it.
Yeah.
Yes. No, but we have talked about the fact that there is no disclaimer, so I don't think we've really gotten
We don't right. need to belabor the point.
Yeah. All right. So we are back, and the title of this episode will be Ron Talks About Gen Con Finally.
Yes. I was able to go to Gen Con when the two of you couldn't or didn't, and you can live vicariously through me. It was amazing. It was totally sold out. I was really surprised when I showed up.
Wow.
To see big signs up that said Gen Con totally sold out all 4 days, like right at the beginning. It used to be that if Gen Con 4 day badges were gone, you probably might not be able to get in on Saturday, but you could maybe buy a Sunday badge or a Thursday badge. No, as soon as you got there, everything was sold out. So,
wow.
It was record setting attendance. The biggest thing for me is that I got to go with my friend Mike, with whom I used to go to Gen Con quite often. But the last time he was able to go was 1994. So he was coming in and when it was in Milwaukee. So he was coming back for his first Gen Con in 30 years. And it was in an entirely different city and just so, so much bigger with so much more stuff. But it was really great. And I got to hang out with Mike. Quite often when I wasn't working, I was the Wizards of the Coast sent me. I was working when I was there, doing some playtesting. So I wasn't out in the exhibit halls, on behalf of Wizards. The only seminar type things I went to, I did some book signings, which were great. Kind of neat to be sort of up there with all my my coworkers, signing books. One of the things that was kind of fun is Wizards of the Coast was selling 750 copies of the Player's Handbook each day to people who got into sort of a special event that opened up first thing in the morning in order to get it. And so having people come through the line with the Player's Handbook, and that was, it wasn't the first time I had actually like held a physical copy of the Player's Handbook we've been working on, but it certainly, I'd seen the highest number of them at once as people were coming through the line, getting them signed. And that was kind of great to see. But when I wasn't doing things for Wizards of the Coast, I was mostly hanging around with my friend Mike and then going to see a bunch of friends of mine that I see at Wizards of the Coast. I saw a lot of the Paizo people. It was great to see Eric Mona, Thirsty, Adam Daigle, Luis, Mike Sayer. You're just a ton of people. I could name drop all evening. But it was a lot of fun. And I realized, you know, there were other gamers, friends of mine that were at Gen Con because we're in different parts of the country, that's one of the only times you actually get to see each other. And I realized about day three, I think this was Saturday, I went to go met up with my good friend Sebastian and his son. And, you know, and Mike was with me, and all four of us went to get dinner. And as Sebastian and his son were walking a couple paces ahead of me, Mike kind of turns to me and he's like, "So is this some other industry person I ought to know, or just a regular gamer?" because he'd met so many industry folks. And I'm like, hey, industry people are regular gamers too. But it was a lot of fun. I didn't get to play a lot of games, but I did get to swing through the exhibit hall, I think every single day. And even though I was very careful to wear a mask every time I went through the exhibit hall, I wasn't masked outside the exhibit hall. I did end up with the Gen Con exclusive of COVID. So I ended up feeling sick.
I'm going to say that's not an exclusive to the whole country.
Summer-wide, I guess that's probably extravaganza this year.
It's a global. It's been a global release, I think.
Well, I got the Gen Con version apparently, and I don't know how different that is. Yeah.
Is it foil lined or embossed?
The hollow foil, extra penalties to your Constitution saves But it was, and that was really frustrating because I felt fine as I left Gen Con. I felt fine for a couple of days afterward. Then I started to feel sick, and I tested, and I was testing negative. So I'm like, well, I just must be sick, right? Con crud is a thing. It's always been a thing. So I thought I just had some sort of sickness when I came back from Gen Con. It turned out once I started feeling better, I still tested, and I finally tested positive. And so I isolated it, and nobody else in my family caught it. Despite having been in proximity, I just felt so cruddy that I was kind of in a sort of isolating accidentally, and that, my family would run off and do things and leave me behind. But anyway, I am 100% fit now, fully recovered, back in the swing of things. It's a whole new month now, even.
Yes.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, we're September already. That's like summer's practically over.
Just about. Yeah. All my kids are going back to school. My youngest two are going back to school tomorrow. My oldest doesn't go back till later this week, but whew. Anyway, wow. Because I was able to spend so much time in the exhibit hall, I got a bunch of cool stuff at Gen Con. One of the things I was most looking forward to getting when I was there was a copy of the new Arkham Horror RPG. Which is very, very different than I expected. The role-playing game based on the Arkham Horror line, Arkham Horror, Eldritch Horror, those board games to be. This is just a starter set, so it kind of walks you through a scenario, very much step by step, to learn the game. So it's not like getting a core book and trying to figure it out from there. It's, a lot of games do sort of a starter edition to teach you a new system. This does exactly the same. So I'm excited to dig into that. I also got, when I was there, I spent a lot of time at the Paizo booth talking to people. I did get my copy of the Starfinder playtest, second edition playtest. I got some stickers. I've already started to sticker over the cover just because if I get stickers, I stick them on stuff right away kind of guy. And I happen to have this book. When I got the sticker, I was showing it to somebody that gave me stickers. It's I'm a little bit surprised how they assume that you have player core, GM core. I wasn't actually expecting that. As soon as I saw the width of the book, it makes sense that you would need the other rules to play because the basic rules to play aren't in here.
Right.
But I think that I had heard that Starfinder Second Edition is going to be complete by itself without requiring the Pathfinder player core or GM core. And I just assumed that would be the same for the playtest book. And it's not.
Because you're asking people to buy a printed copy, we can save on pages space by saying it's the same role initiative and do the three actions stuff that exists. And, you don't need the player core and the GM core. All that stuff is also available on Nethys, right? So in other places, if you have it. So it's, you do need to know those rules for sure.
Well, and I'll be perfectly honest. I don't own a player core. I just haven't picked that up yet, but I've been using the core rulebook for Pathfinder, and this everything here is entirely understandable without the remastered rules. Especially if you've been paying attention to some of the renaming under the it's not an attack of opportunity, it's a reactive strike. Now I get that. The one thing that I found when I was building my character here, and this is a delight. I love seeing sort of errors like this. I have the backgrounds. When you go through the backgrounds, I can't be any background alphabetically past electrician because my page got folded and then sealed together. I could cut it and rip it, but I kind of like that it's I've got a one or two other role-playing books that have a printing error like that I think is actually really funny. So
wait, it's not every copy like that? You got a special copy?
That's right. It is a unique copy. I've got one of the adventure paths for Pathfinder First Edition I have that was sort of cut funny like that across like a picture of Linny the Druid. And I've never not known like Linny the Druid ever since I got that sort of weird fold that kept two pages from opening up because it missed the die cut in the printing. It's just kind of cool. Anyway, when I was at the Paizo booth, one of the things that I had been interested in picking up is the fifth edition version of Abomination
Pulse. Oh, yeah.
Which is, which I have in that, and in fancy, haven't even opened it out, the plastic yet, the special cover.
Special edition. Yeah.
You've got your same one there.
Yeah, yep. Same one. Edition. But I didn't have to go to Gen Con to get any of these things. So, I don't know.
A lot of it was these things that I've been meaning to get. And frankly, I should have bought a Player's Core when I was there. Because a lot of it is that here's the Paizo thing. Having been in Paizo, I'm used to just either getting a copy of it as an employee or you know, a couple copies as a contributor, right? And so sometimes there'd be, I mean, we have, like, I think at one point we had five different copies of the Moenge Expanse book because I was an employee and I got two copies and my wife contributed and got two copies. So we had five copies in our house, which meant we could pass them all around at our Strength of Thousands table, which is great. so now I get kind of a list of, here's the Paizo things that I really want to go get and talk to my friends that are still there about, you know, what they were excited about and kind of, you know, get it from them. I was able to do so at Gen Con and that was great. Picked up a couple of board games as well. There was one of the things that I saw that was a lot of fun is a board game. We haven't tried it yet called Burn the Fort. I don't know if you've heard about this.
Yes, I have heard about it because Mike Sayer has been talking a lot about it.
Before Mike Sayer told me about it. In fact, I bought it before Mike Sayer told me about it.
Fair enough.
So I would, you know, this is back before it was cool, I guess. but this is a board game where, a historical board game, where the white colonizing military is moving across the Great Plains, and you are independently, it's not a cooperative game, independently you are historical indigenous figures trying to preserve your land, protect your people. And whoever does that the best is the one that's going to win. I also picked up, this is a little more of a...
Can I say something that's funny about the game that Mike has said, that there is a, when he was looking at it, I think maybe on the website, there's a picture of all the components, mm-hmm. and there is a colonizer die, like that you roll at points during the game apparently. But it is also like a lot of the components of this game look beautiful. There's like mm-hmm. you know and look great, but the colonizer die is the most basic, boring D6 possible. Like
like you'd
straight out of Monopoly looking D6. Yeah. And I was like, yes, that's perfect. I love it.
I also picked up, and I saw a demo of this in the exhibit hall, and I picked up a big board game.
It's going to be.
Which is called Fate Forge. This is a cooperative board game. It's very beefy. And I only later realized that it is the board game, I think, comes... The board game was predated by a role-playing game setting. And so they have a very robust world setting that they then made a board game out of. I don't think it was the other way around. Sometimes you'll see a lot of games that go the other way around. Sentinels of the Multiverse was a very successful card game, right? Cooperative card game, before they did a whole big RPG about it. And I think Fate Forge went the other way. But I haven't done more than sort of marvel at the many, many components. I haven't set that one up yet.
There you go. What's that board game? I swear there's a game that has a very rich setting, and now I can't. There's multiple board games with this setting. I'm sure that's the case for a lot of games. It's this very fantasy setting. I can't remember the name of it or anything about it, so this is a terrible story.
yes.
But there, you know, it reminded me that I was sort of thinking about that, whether or not it's like, and I feel like that they made these board games and sort of flesh out the setting before they didn't, and I don't even think they even have an RPG. It's just a sort of a very fleshed out setting for these games. I think it's gone.
All right.
Sorry.
Okay. Talk about it if you happen to
getting
see
old.
It.
Yeah.
One of the other things that I saw at Gen Con, and this is one of the things that Gen Con will do for me, especially when I'm going through the exhibit hall. I'll have seen a Kickstarter or something for a game that looks pretty cool, but I never backed it, mm-hmm. and it just kind of falls out of my memory. But then I see it at Gen Con, or I see people with it, and I'm like, oh, that was a thing that I really wanted. Mm-hmm. And what will happen sometimes is the thing I will see at Gen Con is like some super deluxe version. And I'm like, I don't know if I want the super deluxe version. But then when I get home, I'll end up kind of, you know, shopping around a local game store and then end up getting kind of the basic version, which just recently happened because at Gen Con, I saw the game, the horror single player horror game, Final Girl.
Yeah.
People were getting these huge boxes because they come in individual adventures. There's a core box and then individual adventures. And they're getting these huge boxes that were like 10 of the individual adventures. I'm like, I may love this game, but I don't know that I'm going to love it. So I don't want to buy 10 copies of it or 10 different adventures for it. I wonder if I can just get one. And I was at a game store just a couple days ago, I found the core set and exactly one adventure together. I'm like, what I wanted that I didn't sort of take the time to find at Gen Con, but ultimately, thank you, Van Ryder Games, it worked. I ended up getting one anyway. So,
wow. Sounds like you picked up quite a few games.
How did
you pack all that home?
I brought this. See, I felt very, very smart in the 11th hour. Like the night before when I packed everything and I went to bed and I was laying in bed. I was just drifting off to sleep. And I'm like, I'm going to need another bag. So I just picked up one of the two bags I'd packed and dropped it in a bigger suitcase and zipped it right up. And that was it. So I was able to carry everything on the plane. But then on the way home, I had a whole other bag. And then I just checked that.
Cool.
So, Let me recommend that. A couple of the Gen Con survival tips that I've had is first prepare to take a lot more home. If you're driving to Gen Con, like I used to do when I lived in Chicago, it was a lot easier. You know, you can get as many games as will fit in your trunk. Although I do remember one year, friends of mine asked if I could take some of their games home because they bought more than would fit in their trunk in their whole car with all the people they had. I'm like, I've got a little bit of space. I have one fewer passenger than you guys. So yes, I'll have one passenger's worth of a bunch of extra games they bought. God. I think what happened that year is that they won some big tournament and they got a ton of prizes in addition to everything they'd already bought. So it was very much a surprise. Anyway, this time I was flying. And so bring an extra suitcase. The first thing I did when I got in on Wednesday, checked into my hotel, dropped off my luggage, and then I walked to a grocery store and then got a bunch of snacks and a ton of drinks that I could have and carry with me. Indy in August is just super, super hot and humid. You will want to stay hydrated and you won't necessarily want to wait in the long lines that for the food trucks or the drinks or whatever. Kind of make sure you know what's there. One of the things that's neat about Gen Con is you can wander around, you know, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning. A lot of the things are closed. Exhibit hall obviously is closed, but so many people are doing late night things in hotel lobbies and they're, you know, sort of, you know, setting up games that are sort of around the clock in some of them that you can just kind of wander around and be like, oh, there's so much sort of cool stuff going on, whatever hours you happen to be up. And then I had, as I've gotten older, I took my friend Ken's advice. He's older than I am. He clued into this sooner than I did. He simply doesn't schedule anything before 10 a.m. You know, he's like, look, you know, this is as much vacation as anything else. I want to make sure that I'm well rested for everything. Being hydrated, being well rested can work really well to keep con crud away too. So couple of my Gen Con survival tips up there.
And cool. You didn't have to do any work before 10 a.m.
I mean, it didn't work in the middle of a global pandemic. I don't know that I'm going to blame my tips for that. But
No, I'm saying you didn't have to do any wizard stuff at before 10 a.m., right? You
didn't
have
any
official duties, so you lucked out.
I guess it wouldn't have mattered if they scheduled me for stuff at 7 a.m. I'd have been up at 7 a.m. in order to do it. But because what I was doing was a lot of playtest observation, and we didn't want to make playtesters get up at 7 a.m., it was kind of convenient.
That's for me. It's smart, yeah.
And we had a great team. It was really fun to be with the group of people I was with, sort of. Not everybody from Wizards went, but it was kind of cool to be seeing the people that I went with. Not only that we were working together, but we'd see each other sort of the occasional function outside of work or kind of past, you know, at a restaurant or whatever. And it was kind of, hey, there's my people, right? But everybody's my people. That's one of the cool things about Gen Con.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right, so that is Ron's Gen Con download.
Wow, now I feel like I missed an awful lot here. I'm gonna have to go next year for sure. I'm not gonna buy a house next year, so I think. I'll be okay.
I mean, you weren't gonna buy a house this year, so don't make big promises.
I know. This has been a lot of work buying this one, so I need a couple year break, probably 15 or 20 even. So.
Gen Con is always a lot. I kind of like, no matter when you go, you know, what year you go, it's always going to be a lot and hopefully a lot of fun. Same, John, I really want to go next year. I have a big book coming out, to be honest. So, yes.
Oh, yeah. 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 I like to see that one coming out.
Yeah.
So.
I'm going to keep teasing it.
What's that?
I'm going to keep teasing it here, apparently. I think we've maybe said something.
What is coming, you know?
I can't really actually say. It's coming out next Gen Con.
All righty.
Keep an eye out on paizo.com for more details.
Yeah, they should be announcing something in
soon-ish, yeah.
Soon, yeah, I would imagine. Well, kind of other news. I think it's very fortunate that all three of us have hardcovers of the Starfinder second edition playtest, since we have begun recording our Intrepid Heroes. So we had our session one, which I won't say anything about other than that. So I just posted an episode that came out today. That was episode 12. I think our episodes go to 16.
Okay.
Oh, wait. So it'll be, people have to wait like a month before they hear us kick off this campaign.
2 months.
2 months. Oh, that's mean. Well, then let me tease a little bit by saying that kicking off adventure paths and adventures is always sort of awesome, right? What's the coolest way you can sort of start this adventure? And this, man, the Cosmic Birthday has a great start to it.
Yes. Oh, yeah, I was surprised. So
I did not expect that. That was
good. Good. I won't say any more than that because I shouldn't say any more to even to you two.
No. I'm excited. Yeah. So episode 16 is the final of our Scum and Villainy campaign, and episode 12 just came out today. So we'll get there. We'll get there.
We'll get there pretty soon. To put a couple more recordings in the bag.
Yes. You know, yes.
Which would be good.
Well, Gen Con also had a lot of announcements about stuff that was coming out. And one thing I was trying to remember is, when is the Galaxy Guide releasing? Do either of you guys remember that?
It's like March, April, or May. It's in the spring of next year. So it is before full second edition comes out.
And that's really interesting to me because it's putting out, it's got a lot of rule stuff in it. It's got like six new ancestries before the rules even come out. I mean, obviously, you know, Paizo knows how to do ancestries. They've been doing them for Pathfinder second edition. But that's a really interesting cadence. I could see if it were entirely like a lore book that it wouldn't need to come before the main rule book for the thing. But this one's got a bunch of rules in it, and that feels very brave to me.
Yeah. It's definitely like you said, the architecture is known, and it's not like that's going to change in the playtest, that you get an ancestry and it has some, you know, boosts and flaws maybe, and then you get a feed at first, fifth, you know, 13th or 9th, 13th, whatever. Right, you know, that's not going to change. So why not make, you know, have the ability, and you know, with Starfinder having over 100 playable species in the first edition, right? Like, that's going to take a long time to catch up because they take up a lot more space than just a sidebar. Mm-hmm. You gotta have all those feats and all the heritages and whatnot. So yeah, why not start trickling them out? You know, get some stuff where you had that. You'll be like, oh, I can finally play. I don't feel like they said a couple ancestries, but I can't remember now.
Isn't the Astrozoan one of them?
Astrozoan was one. Yeah. They showed some concept art. They showed some concept art.
That was
art.
Scary concept art.
So some Astrozoan. I'm hoping they do, like, just because, you know, for personal reasons, do most of the playable species that we had in the Pact Worlds book, which was Astrozoan and a couple more. So hopefully they'll do a couple. And they already did, because they already done Borai, which was one of them. So maybe they'll end up getting through the Pact Worlds ones. They said Kalo as well, but I don't remember if that is.
Yeah, I remember hearing Kalo. Yeah.
Okay.
I don't remember if that was in Pact Worlds or not. I think it should have been. If it wasn't, that was a big mistake.
I think so.
I think it was, yeah. But mainly, I just hope they do. I, you know, personally, I hope they do Bantrid, because
we got to play the Devastation Arc Adventure Path, aka the Bantrid Deep Dive Adventure Path.
John and I were talking about this, I think, a little bit, yeah, about the Gossip mm-hmm. Guide, yep, the first week, right? And I said, hopefully they put the Bantrids in, and John said, you know, Devastation Arc. And that is because Devastation Arc was being planned, when it was being planned by me and Rob McCreary, both of us were like, we like Bantrids. Should we just explain more about what's going on at the bench? When else are we going to do it? Right? There's like, let's just do it. Let's just give them a sad backstory. That was fun.
Yes, and there's lots of different types of Bantrids in that one as well. So
sure, kinda, yeah. Well,
interesting.
Yeah. I remember you guys. I watched the episode where you guys were talking about the Bantrids, and I thought, well, now I want the Embry, the sort of the mollusks, the mask wearing mollusks. Most of the Starfinder, I guess it was species then, races then, even work that I did was on the Embry and sort of odd different options for them. And I kind of got to sort of dig into the, you know, what's a culture like of, you know, a culture where masks are so ubiquitous and so necessary that, like, taking them off is like worse than being naked, right? Because anybody can see what your emotions are just by looking at your face. And so I thought that was kind of fun. I hope that they make the list at some point when they're updating the 100 plus, you know, playable species from Starfinder First Edition.
Yeah. Whether or not they're going to be like creating some new ones as well, which I imagine that they will. Because
they've already made some.
Ton of Starfinder.
Yeah.
Have they?
Yeah. That one, the little lightning ball thing, whatever it was. And
not in second edition.
You're right. Edition.
That was
still first edition.
Upgraded or whatever.
You're right.
Enhanced. Starfinder enhanced. There's no question, but
when it came out,
I mean, because that's the fun. Yeah, it was near the end. I mean, but again, that's so much fun. Why not do it? I'm sure we'll see some completely brand new ones in the coming months, and, you know, in the coming edition cycle, essentially, right? Like, because while it's sort of the same thing for, like, you know, second edition Pathfinder from first edition, it's not like we need to update everything that was in first edition exactly into second edition, right? Because A, that's not as interesting. Let's come up with new stuff. And B, you know, some of it can go by the wayside. Maybe there's some playable species that can just fall away, and that's just fine.
Well, I think that's right. Although I do have to say, if I were still producing for Starfinder Infinite, one of the things that I'd do is just take a list of all the playable species and then tick off all the ones that Paizo's doing that they've announced, right, in the second edition playtest rulebook and the galaxy guide. And then, you know, just because I feel like I'm, you know, not bad at creating ancestries, do whichever one of the others felt really interesting to me, put it up on Starfinder Infinite just to be kind of a, you know, oh, how might this be? sure, Paizo eventually may do one of those, and few people are going to be interested in a Starfinder Infinite version of something that has an official version to it. But they might not. You know, yeah, Paizo might not get to it for a long time, if ever, depending on what some of the species are. So that could be kind of a fun task. I don't know if there's going to be a lot of people sort of jumping on that right at, you know, day one Starfinder Infinite when the game itself releases next Gen Con, but that's something that I would have considered doing.
Would you do, would you done one or like five in a book or just?
This is, I always bite off more than I can chew for Infinite, so I probably would have done all of them. I don't know how I would release them, right?
Well, that would have taken a while. But I mean, like in one, I was going to say like in one product, in one PDF, but you're doing one at a time. Yeah, you could do
that. Well, I would probably
get through a lot.
I don't know. I'd probably try to group them like with sort of like, you know, like groups of, I don't know, 5 to 7 at once. And then make it clear that it's part of a series. And then make all of them available in one product, or you can, at a much cheaper price, just get sort of whatever tranche has, you know, whichever, you know, one or two the buyer is interested in. Could be kind of interesting. But yeah, the other thing, though, that I think, as you say, Jason, that people are going to be watching not just what Starfinder brings forward from first edition into second edition, but what new ground they break and what new things they can do. One of the reasons I'm really excited about the Galaxy Guide is because I want to see how sort of the Pact world has changed. I assume that history isn't going to have changed, but it'll, but like the, who the major players are with the different groups that we know about, the Swarm, the Vesk, you know, the Vesk Imperium, the Aslanti Star Empire, and then a whole other groups we might not know anything about. We'll all kind of come together and to sort of chart the narrative way forward for the lore. And that just feels really cool. I really like that kind of stuff.
Well, we'll get some first hand look at some things in Intrepid Heroes. We'll say that.
Cool.
About some of the changes. And we've already sort of talked a little bit about one of the changes that is, they mentioned, it's mentioned in the playtest. There's not like any setting stuff in the playtest, except for just in like at the beginning of all the ancestries, there's a little bit, you know, where they're from and stuff like that. And I think, well, there might be a little, is there even a little primer to the Pact Worlds? Maybe a little primer to the Pact Worlds right at the beginning. But one of the things they do mention is that Polonis, which is the Patra homeworld, used to be in the Vescarium, the Vescarium, and now is a Pact Worlds, which is pretty cool.
Yes.
And outside of the Pact Worlds, outside of the system, Pact Worlds, basically.
Yeah, that's actually, I think there's a real, I like, I've done this sometimes in sort of fantasy lore design. It's interesting to see it on sort of a galactic scale. The idea of a sort of a part of a nation that exists that's wholly surrounded by the borders of a different nation, and what that's like sort of in real world politics, what it might be like in fantasy politics. I don't know. I'm kind of excited to see where that goes. I suspect the Vesk Imperium is not particularly happy about that.
I mean, they didn't. They basically let it happen. I mean, not let it happen, but like they didn't stop it from happening.
Right.
So something. Well, that's something we'll learn probably much more about in Galaxy Guide. We'll know about what life on Polonis is like now. Are there Vesk still there? Or they, you know, is the Vescarium still like? Does it have an embassy or whatever? Because you know. Those planets are those Vesk planet. Other planets are close, way, way closer.
Right. Cool. Well, it sounds like there's a lot of cool stuff at Gen Con and a lot of neat stuff to look forward to over the next year, releases and for Paizo and other companies. Mm-hmm. So, you didn't touch on this much, but you had a do you have a copy of the Player's Handbook that got released?
I do. I don't
know if you showed that.
I did not get one when I was there, but I've gotten one since, a copy of the new Player's Handbook. It's nice and thick.
I'm supposed to get one tomorrow if I have time, but I probably won't have
time. That's right, because the Wizards Play Network stores have them 2 weeks before the release date, and I think that's tomorrow.
Yeah, I pre-ordered one, the alternate cover. So.
Oh, that's very funny. I don't have the alternate cover one.
I'm going to be crazy busy tomorrow because have this game I got to do after work. And
this game you have to run way out in the, you know, just so far from Seattle, so far from Camino, way out in Carnation. It's
The hinterlands there. Yep. Even, so. All right. Well, hey, this has been great. And I'm glad that we got Ron back and get back to our disclaiming and everything. So
thank you. I missed you guys. It was fun to see you guys carry on without me. Knowing I'd be back in my third of the screen before too long.
I'm John.
And I'm Ron.
And I'm Jason. And this has been Digital Divination.